Summer concert season is almost upon us, and if you're heading out to a country show, it'll be all about the boots. With seasonal and limited edition offerings this spring and summer, including men's and women's boots, apparel, hats, bags, and more, Tecovas is your stop for the best in Western style. Stop by your local Tecovas store, have a complimentary drink or two, and shop new styles. The smell of fresh leather and a friendly staff are at your service. Many stores even have leather custom branding to make your boots truly personalized. And with regular live music and events, there is no in-store experience quite like it. If you can't make it into a store, just visit tecovas.com. That's T-E-C-O-V-A-S.com. They offer free shipping on all boots, as well as free returns and exchanges. And they ship right to your door. Go to tecovas.com and find your new favorite pair of boots today. You've heard me talk about my dog Tucker a lot on this podcast, and it's hard to imagine our family now without the joy that this little field spaniel has brought to our daily lives. That's when we were approached about advertising Superfood Complete on the show, and I said, well, yes, of course. Actress Katherine Heigl has helped save over 16,000 dogs through her foundation, and she is seeing more and more issues with dogs' joints, odors, and health than ever before. So she decided to create something she could actually feel good about feeding her dogs. Superfood Complete is made with over 30 of the healthiest ingredients on the planet, including several superfoods vital to your dog's health. Dogs across America, just like my dog Tucker, are trying Superfood Complete and experiencing amazing health benefits. Go to BadlandsRanch.com/Zabe and order right now to get up to 50% off your regularly priced order with a 90-day money-back guarantee. If you want your dog to experience these incredible things, go to BadlandsRanch.com. That's BadlandsRanch.com/Zabe today. Today on the Zabecast, if you were downtown in D.C. on Saturday night, you were at a party. The Capitals are inching closer to their first ever Stanley Cup, and I got full team coverage of my night. Michael Jenkins, NBC Sports Washington, joins me. He's got a new hit single called It's Okay to Believe. All that plus NIMBYs take aim at Waze. If you've got 45 minutes to kill, then buckle up and let's go.
Here we go.
Theodore to play it. Jay Beagle to the wing, got it to Smith Philly, he scores! Do you remember game one late? Devontae Smith Pelly, what did he do? He couldn't get the puck out. Vegas scored. What does he do here? He gets the puck in deep. Great hustle by Jay Beagle. Look at Smith Pelly. Patience. Top shelf on Fleury.
I love how he just drives to a scoring area. Watch him just accelerate right there to the scoring area. Create separation. And up and over Marc-Andre Fleury. Forecheck hockey personified right there by the Capitals.
Simple plays in hockey games, Doc. The blue line, you got to get pucks in, you got to get them out.
And there it was on Saturday night. Oh, what a night, man. It was a thrill to be there. Hey, everybody, happy Monday, June 4, 2018. Thank you for downloading and thank you for listening. NBA Finals Game 2 was Sunday night. It was too late for this edition, as they once said in the newspaper business. I'm actually trying to change the production schedule, so to speak, here of the Zabecast, so that it'll be there for you at 6 a.m. in the morning for the next day. So there might be some events that aren't quite as topical, but I think hearing from people and just doing some research on what's the best practices for podcasts that are daily, Monday through Friday, getting it out there early for you guys. Early is better than later, right? I mean, if you don't eat it in the morning, it'll be there for you in the afternoon or the next day or whenever. That's the beauty of podcasting. We will talk NBA tomorrow. Scheduled to appear, the big ginger, Tim Murray. Michael Jenkins, speaking of gingers, of NBC Sports Washington will join us. He has written a song, yes, a song about the Capitals that I love. It's part corny, part cool,
totally hilarious and completely off the cuff for a guy that's got no musical background whatsoever. You know me, singing things like Eastbound and Down. I love that kind of stuff. Jenkins has been in this market for a long time and does good work on NBC Sports Washington. So, to Saturday night, downtown D.C., Capitals versus Knights, Stanley Cup Final, game number 3. I went yet again with Peter Bartel, who is in town from Milwaukee. He is going to host me in Vegas. He is a big Vegas Golden Knights fan and wore the opposing jersey in the building. And he became a Golden Knights fan because growing up in Wisconsin and living there with his family, he's got, you know, he loves hockey, but the Blackhawks have always been kind of forced upon Milwaukeeans and Wisconsinites because that's the closest NHL team there. So he became a Golden Knights fan because he does a lot of business in Vegas, and so therefore is quite a natural for him. Well, he came to D.C. because he's all wrapped up in the series and was having fun, and we'll be out there for Game 5 on Thursday night, and I can't thank him enough for that. He did, you know, so I went to the game with him, but I also had a connection with Capital One. And I had a connection with Capital One to do some tweeting. I apologize for the crass commercial tweets, but, you know, they were hooking me up, and I was, you know, happy to take their generosity on that front. And actually, by the way, I did get a jersey at 20% off. I got myself a genuine Adidas fan replica jersey with the Stanley Cup Finals patch on it. That's the most important thing. I was like, I'm looking there at all the little concession stands and the team stores in the arena. I'm like, where's the ones with the Stanley Cup Finals patch on it? And the guy said, oh, here, it's right here. And they were hanging on a separate hook, not attached. He said the production schedule to get these in people's hands too quick turnaround from when the, you know, conference finals ended. So the NHL has put out the patch. And if you just take this patch, if you buy the patch, you go down to a station between portals and they will affix it for you to your jersey and get it nicely, professionally steam pressed on there. And so I did. The patch itself was $24.99 plus tax. Ah, but with my 20% off, thanks to my Capital One card, what's in your wallet? It only cost me $19.99. Total ripoff, of course, but I figured I don't own an actual current Capitals jersey. I don't even know if I own my old Caps jersey from back in the day, which I used to play street hockey in. Damn it, I wish I'd saved that. Anyway, so I don't really have a current Caps jersey. I have T-shirt jerseys, or shirzies, as we call them. But otherwise, no, I don't have one. And I said, well, son of a bitch, I need one. I almost got a Verona 13, because you can get pretty much any player in the team shop pre-made in your size when you go to Capital One Arena. And while Verona's young and very promising upside, and I do like the number 13 as a jersey number, I said, I don't know. You know, if you're going to get a jersey, and I think this is going to be my one Caps jersey, get the Hall of Famer, get the grade 8 with the Captain C on it on one chest and then the Stanley Cup logo on the other. So I got the jersey after the game. I was waiting for the traffic to die down just a bit. Went and got it pressed on there. They did a very good job. They didn't just slap it on there. They actually had like a ruler and they measured it to make sure it lined up just correctly. What horrified me is that some fans had bought the Stanley Cup Finals patch and they were having these guys at this little press station affixing it to all kinds of different Caps jerseys. To a Winter Classic jersey. They had someone putting it on an old version of the jersey. There was a woman that wanted one on a new Stadium Series jersey, the alternate blue, and the guy actually said to her, he goes, ma'am, this patch does not belong on that jersey, but if you want me to put it there, I will do it. And I think she turned around, said something to her husband, looked a little bit miffed, and then stomped off. And I kind of gave the guy a nod. I was like, that's a good job. I said, that shouldn't be the case. I'm sitting there looking at these old ratty Dale Hunter jerseys, and it's got the Stanley Cup Finals patch on it after, you know, some woman walks up, or a guy, might have been a guy, and says, yes, I'd like this on there. No, that's not how it works. But, you know, to each his own. You pay $24.95 for a patch, much less the $220 and change for the jersey. Put it on whatever you want. It was an amazing life, amazing night, and my life is amazingly charmed in that. Got free parking from Atlantic Parking, ding. I did not plan this, I swear. I was like, God, where am I going to park with all these road closures? And the CEO of Atlantic Parking, they own a bunch of garages, big listener, said, oh, yeah, don't worry, we'll take care of you, VIP. Boom. Free parking. My birthday run continues. Then I get, you know, the hookup for the upgraded seats from Capital One, and they were fantastic. Behind the shooting goal for the Capitals for the first and third period, I would say 20 rows up, thereabouts. In fact, I was right in the zone, and I mentioned this to our Capital One host, Allie, who was going to her first Capitals game ever. I said, you know, they didn't used to have this netting above the glass here until about 15 years ago. And maybe it's more than that by now. Time flies. And I told her the story about the tragic story of the young girl who died in Columbus after getting hit by a puck. And then 2 days later, a blood clot shook free in her head and killed her. And I told her how I used to on my show bellyache mightily about how this had ruined the view and that it was, you know, one more over protection for, you know, fans should know they should be paying attention. And if they don't want to sit there, they can move somewhere else. Well, there I was sitting in Rowan, section 105, seat 5. And I'm going, boy, oh boy, kind of glad there's that netting right there. It did obstruct the view. But honestly, when you're in one of those seats and you're looking down the ice 200 feet away at the other goal, you're not seeing much of what happens anyway. You've got to go watch up on the Jumbotron if you really want to see what's going on. But when the action is in your end and you're watching the players, there is nothing like it. I mean, it's amazing how on TV, the players all look further away from the goalie than they do in person, which I thought would have been maybe the opposite in real life. On TV, it looks like, oh yeah, he's way out there. He's not going to score. Man, in real life, in person, you know, that close to the action, you're watching these guys skate around and you're thinking, holy shit, he's right there in front of the goalie. Like, that's so tight right there, the space. And I like sitting on the end because you can see the weaving in and out of how these guys navigate their way through traffic up ice. And it is, it's a wonder. It's a miracle. It's incredible. It's such a great sport. It's a delicacy. I know not everyone's into it. You're probably going to sit there right now going, oh, Jesus, is this Zabecast all hockey? Answer, mostly, sort of. So I know not everyone loves it, but just give it a try. So anyway, I went to game 3. Totally unexpected to the last minute. Working backwards, Peter said he'd get me into game 5 in Vegas. That was the first one. I go, okay, you know what? It's my birthday. All right, boom. I'll get out there. I'll go to one game in the series. That'll be more than enough. Incredible. Then my man Dan Purcell from upstate New York of Purcell, Ward, and Greenberg, I believe, his law firm. Very successful lawyer. Very generous man. Says, we got to go to game 4. I'm coming down to D.C. We got to go. And he wouldn't let me say no. And I said, okay, I twist my arm. So we're going on Monday night. And then this Capital One thing and Peter fell into my lap for game 3. And I'm like, well, holy shit, I'm like in the series now. I'm going to 3 straight games. And I know, it's a joke, right? My charmed life, free parking, 3 tickets to 3 Stanley Cup games in a row, plus going to Vegas. Fuck me, right? Yeah, I hear you. I hear you. I did feel guilty, though, for some of my buddies, some of my best Caps fan buddies, like my boy One Account Rhodesy, who went on Craigslist and swore he had what looked like legitimate tickets via Craigslist to the game for $300 a piece for 4 of them together. I said, bro, Craigslist, it's a great place to get murdered, raped, ripped off, or knocked over the head with a steel club, with a tire iron, and left for dead. He's like, I know, I know, I know. And I said, well, would you correspond with this guy and what'd he say? And the guy was like, he showed me the 4 tickets. He showed me the printout confirming their purchase from the Washington Capitals themselves. And when asked, he said, well, why are you selling these for $300 when the StubHub get-in price for the worst seats, and by the way, these were in a mezzanine, so mid-level seats in the arena, worst seats on StubHub apparently for Game 3 were going for $1,100. And the guy said, "Oh, I do this all the time. I just don't like to deal with the hassle. I mean, I make 80 or 90 of these sales every year. I don't use all my tickets, and I've got this and I've got that." And I said, "Man, it just sounds fishy to me." So if you have any Craigslist stories about ticket buying and ticket selling and ticket scamming, I would love to hear from them. I think my buddy did the right thing by saying no to that, because it doesn't, if it's too good to be true, what's the phrase? It's not possibly true. A lot of talk about, oh, by the way, while I was down there, I was recognized by way too many people. I used to be much more anonymous in radio 15 years ago, but now with, you know, some TV appearances, and especially with social media and Twitter and everything else, you know, a lot of people stopping me. I was very humbled by it. I took literally dozens of pictures, maybe 24 pictures with fans, and they were all great. And like I said, I'm very humbled by it. Got to talk to my boy Smoke and Al Koken. And we had a good chat where we're looking at the scene and we're looking at the streets filled with people in red and all the stuff there. And I said, you know, I didn't think we could get this, Al. I didn't think we'd have enough people to fill up a watch party or to be downtown outside without tickets watching on a Jumbotron. I didn't think our town was that way, even though I wanted it. I yearned for it. I thought, man, look at that in Vancouver. Man, look at that in Toronto. Man, look at that here, there, and everywhere else. And Smoke and Al said something which was, I thought, very on point. He said, yeah, you know what? Neither did I. And part of what Wilbon said was right about D.C. not being a, quote, minor league sports town. There's that little nugget of it that he wasn't necessarily wrong about, or at least that was the reputation before. But a lot has changed, and we've never been in a championship round like this. Not in the modern digital internet era. You know, 20 years ago, 1998, the internet was around, but it was still in its crib. When I should have strangled the internet for the good of all society. Die, internet, die. A lot was made about what was our pregame going to be. To quote-unquote match, or to, oh yeah, Vegas, watch this. And the pregame was going great, I thought, until one thing happened. First of all, let me just tell you about a video that you should watch. It's done by the Capitals video game production department. It's wonderful. It's perfect. It's got this music. There's really no words. There's no script to it, and it's not needed. Basically, it's called Our City, Our Team, Our Time. And I want to change it to Our Town, Our Team, Our Time, just for the alliterative TTT, but that's okay. We're not a town, we're a city. And this video, which is 2.5 minutes, it's just got a lot of cutaways and montages and super slow-mos of, you know, the granular nature of hockey. The Zamboni cleaning the ice. The guys laundering the jerseys. The players getting off planes and laughing in slow motion and bonding as a team, and then they start to mix in highlights of great plays with the players through the years, and then they start showing, and this is where the music kind of ramps up here in just a second. So it's building and it's building. The lights are dark in the arena. The crowd is going crazy. So you got to imagine the crowd going, getting all pumped up. It starts to ramp up when they show some of the star players and what they were like when they were a lot younger. Clips of them in juniors. Clips of them when they were with the Hershey Bears winning championships like Holtby and Carlson. And just the joy of the moment as the music begins to swell, you know? I'm getting kind of choked up right now. You know, and they've got shots of Backstrom with his family and his kids, and Oshie is the same way. And so it ties in all that community, and here's our team, and shots of the memorial and everything else, and then great highlights here. Ovechkin. I mean, it's like you, and remember, the crowd right now is so it all leads up to this great big crescendo. And I'm like, this is great. As soon as this wraps up and the players come on the ice, let's go ahead and do the anthem. And then, as we like to say, let's do that hockey, as they say in hockey. And And it's like, okay, great. You know, okay, here comes the players out on the ice. And we're like, let's go. Let's go. The crowd is at a fever pitch. Unfortunately, instead of let's do that hockey, y'all, as they say.
He's playing great, which is crazy because he got in a full fist fight in the first minute of the game. But hey, as they say in hockey, let's do that hockey.
Instead of let's do in that hockey, or let's do that hockey, they brought out Pat Sajak. And Pat Sajak is a sort of long-time season ticket holder, 13 years. And he is well-liked amongst the Caps family. And he has shown quite a bit. But you had him just out there alone in a pullover starting to talk about stuff. And I'm like, oh, you're killing the mood. You're losing the room here. What are you doing? And it led up to introducing each team's starting lineup in a sort of a, Wheel of Fortune way with the letters being revealed. And the fans booed the shit out of the Vegas players and they cheered the Caps players. But it just, it was the only thing that I would have changed about the night. I just thought Pat Sajak, as well-liked as you are, not the place to do it. Less is more. Let's go right from that wonderful crescendo to the anthem's anthem. And then the game itself. By the way, if you want to see the that video, go to the Capitals NHL.com website. I did retweet it. It might be easier to find on my Twitter timeline. It's called Our City, Our Time, or Our Team, Our Time. So there you go. Linda Carter was there. Wonder Woman, uh-huh. She's, boy, approaching 70 almost. Still looks good. Still looks good for a lady her age, but man. We're all getting so old so fast, it's depressing. Joe Jackson Gibbs was there, the great, beloved coach of the Washington Redskins and Super Bowl champion, three-time Super Bowl champion. He led a thunderous rendition of Let's Go Caps amidst all the thunder sticks, or not the thunder sticks, but the light-up glow sticks, which were very badass, given out to all the fans. And then shame on NBC, or NBC Sportsnet. Actually, it was big NBC on Saturday night. They brought down Kenan Thompson from SNL, who I like and is very funny, and they claimed he was a Caps fan. Now, not only is there footage of him getting on set, somebody took with their phone, taking off his Yankee hat, and then putting on a Caps hat. He can be fans of both teams. You know, it's baseball and hockey. Right. And then when asked in an interview, who are your favorite Capitals, Kenan Thompson said, Ochi. And he also said, Brent Holtby. Debacle. Just don't do that. I know they wanted the pop for SNL. You know, I know they were going to tie that in. Could you maybe coach him up just a bit? Or don't let him be interviewed. Just show him. Okay? Speaking of Ochi, and I'm not sure if that was a mashup of TJ Oshie and Alex Ovechkin, but TJ Oshie and Matt Niskanen took the subway to the game, which was classic. Kuzi played amazing, scored a goal with a wrist that everyone thought was so messed up. There's no way he's going to play, at least for a game or two. Don't ever doubt Dr. Ovi, who said literally the night that he got injured and left in Vegas, he'll be fine. He's not going to be a problem. And like I said in that video I posted, that idiotic video right as the horn was sounding, we have two Russian machines that never break because Kuzi was awesome. So I'm sitting there with Allie. One more thing about the game. I'm sitting there with Allie from Capital One. Young Allie, who has said to me as she's sitting there, because she was with the Capital One promotion team, she said, I've never been to a hockey game. This is my first ever. And I'm like, wow, well, okay then. What a way to get into the game. All right. I said, listen, any questions, there's no such thing as a dumb question. Just ask me. I'll do my best to answer it. Some things even I'm a little bit fuzzy on. So we were talking during the game and during stoppages and between periods, and we were talking about stuff. She played soccer, so she got a lot of the concepts of offsides and icing and everything else. But, you know, she was like, man, these guys are, it's amazing how well-conditioned they must be and how, you know, how fast they go and everything else. So I was talking about how long shifts are, like 45 seconds basically, because you just go breakneck speed and you give it all you got and then you get off the ice. And it got to the point where we were talking about, you know, forechecking. And I said, you know, one of the things that makes hockey exhausting, and I can speak from experience, having played horrible D-League men's adult rec hockey, I said one of the things that really wears you out is changing direction. You know, skating hard, stopping, changing direction, digging in with your skates. I said it's like skiing when you feel that burn in your legs and you're like, oh, man. So I then started pointing out some, you know, forecheckers. I'm like, you know, one of the things that's exhausting and these guys have to do is that, okay, look, here comes the puck. See our guy? He's going to come skating really hard after this guy. He's going to follow him all the way around behind the net. He's not going to come close to getting the puck. These guys have to do this, even though they know this is probably not, this is pointless. I can't catch this guy, but they have to do it. That's their job, because you have to keep pressure on the other team. Little things like that. And sure enough, on that Devontae Smith-Pelly goal that iced it to make it 3-1, it was Jay Beagle, who I'm starting to love more and more and more, who pressed up, who challenged on the forecheck, and caught poor Shea Theodore. It just a little bit of a slip. That's all it was. He just whiffed a tiny little bit on handling the puck. He was just going to give it a little scooch-scooch touch-up, and then he was going to flip it out of the zone. And on the scooch-scooch touch-up, I'm not sure if that's a technical hockey term or not, he just whiffed on it. And so it got away from him for a split second, and because Beagle was hustling, he was on it. He was on it like your dog under the dining room table at dinner on a piece of scrap that had fallen. Boom, boom, gobbled it right up. And, of course, it took DSP cruising in behind, being in position, seeing that a play may develop, and then he jumps up with a burst of speed, as you heard from the play-by-play there from Doc Emmerich, and he swoops into position. Beagle knows he's coming, sees he's coming, might see a flash of red, who knows? Or just says, I've dug it out on a turnover, why not? Here, somebody go jump in front of this. It gets right on DSP's blade for just a second. And what was great about the goal, and this is for a guy who is a fourth line checking power forward, he doesn't panic. He doesn't just go, oh God, I'm right in front of the net, shoot, shoot, anything. He doesn't just try to flip it. He doesn't, you know, drive it right into Marc-Andre Fleury's chest. He holds it. Just for a split second. He just lets it collect on a stick as he's cruising in. And I saw some still photos of this, which were fantastic. He lets it collect on a stick, and then he waits until, and his body is kind of turned because the puck is behind him. And he's totally in control and waits, and then flip, roofs it right overneath, right over top of Fleury's glove. Didn't technically roof it. It didn't hit the roof of the net. That's what that term is in hockey for you noobs. If you lift it up so sharply that it hits the underside of the inside of the net, that's called roofing it. But no, he went top corner on a beautiful goal scorer's goal. Quite a night. Game 4 Monday. Rain is supposedly going to clear out. Should be good weather downtown. We'll be broadcasting from Penn Social, Scott Lynn and myself. So come on by and say hi. It's just a couple of blocks west of Capital One Arena. And if you are there, you will see all the TV sets. And you will see one of the guys who is on TV, Michael Jenkins, who we'll talk to in just a second. Now, Jenkins is, I would call Jenkins a quasi-romantic, quasi-goofball, creative type sportscaster. He does a lot of man on the street stuff. He does a lot of interesting set pieces. He's not just a read the scores kind of a guy. Well, he wrote a song that I saw on Twitter that's right up my alley. You might say that's the worst song ever. That's the cheesiest, dumbest thing ever. Or you might say, you know what? That's hilarious. That's brilliant. The video that goes with it, with the sort of the artsy effect to some of the clips, is perfect. But you'll hear the backstory on how he wrote this. Here's the song called It's Okay to Believe.
You know, it's been a long time since someone wrote a song about the Caps. Since they're back in the finals, that needs to change. There's a young man named Kuznetsov, who slayed a demon, spread his wings, and scored. There's a bearded man named the Hulk Beast, who swallowed the lightning and began to roar. There's a captain, got a date with destiny. It's okay to believe. Yeah, it's okay to believe. When you're repping DC. Yeah, it's okay to believe. There's a golden boy named Backstrom with silky mitts, a young girl's dream. There's a man who stands like a mountain, and Tommy Wilson wants to watch you bleed. There's a captain, and he's about to realize his dream. Do it! It's okay to believe. Yeah, it's okay to believe. When you're repping DC, yeah, it's okay to believe.
What is up, man?
Not much. How you doing?
You are a nut, man. So
I just
played here on the Zabecast Michael Jenkins' new hit single, It's Okay to Believe.
Oh, God.
Bro, that was awesome. That was awesome. Like, seriously, okay, I'm pretty lame musically, so explain to me, was that based on a hook from some other song?
No, you know, first of all, I'm very well aware that that is, you know, a dude on his couch taking hockey way too seriously. But I was sitting around one night, and I was kind of just, I was on my day off, and I was so hyped up about watching this team. So I delved into the NBC music library, and I found some ridiculous instrumental, and I thought, well, I can write something to that.
So you grabbed it off the NBC's production music library.
Yes, I went online and searched through, I don't know how many, you know, you search for keywords like rock anthem or something, and found some song that was, I don't know, it was 2 minutes of rock music. So I thought, well, I think I could write something to that. So that's what I did, and I sat down and threw some music on, recorded, you know, put a phone in front of my face for a few minutes and put something down.
Do you have a musical background in addition to being an Emmy award-winning sportscaster?
No, I have none. The only thing I've done, which is not really a musical background, is back in the day, I used to sing, which I don't have a great voice, but my old crew in Austin, I was in Austin for 6 years before I came here in 2004, and we probably hit the karaoke bar, I don't know.
Okay.
Two or three times a week, and it just became this thing that we did. So, you know, you're able to get away with sort of putting your inhibitions to the side and, you know, shooting someone like Cass doesn't compare to being in front of a bunch of strangers.
So you're a karaoke veteran, which really should be in your Twitter bio. By the way, follow Michael at Jenks NBCS, listed as proud Longhorn, Emmy winner, loves bourbon and Nicole Darren, sports casting's Ron Burgundy, quote unquote, from Dan Patrick. Put in there, also a veteran of karaoke, and now
get that in.
And now single artist. That, I mean, that's great. That is the perfect song. It's okay to believe. That encapsulates every Capitals fan in this town. And now, right now, as you know, because you've done so many man on the street stuff for NBC Sports Washington, you've met so many fans. Now we're way up on this ladder, Jenks, where it is really high. And if you're a fan who looks down right now, you're going to get a little dizzy thinking about where we are right now, right?
Oh, no question. And it's so close. It's so close. But the one thing I will say is that, and I think this has resonated with the team, is that for the first time, there's been this sort of sea change among fans where they're just not scared anymore. And now, yeah, if you look down and you start thinking about it and you put too much thought into it, listen, there's a long way to fall here. But there's something about this team, the way it plays, the way it never gives up, and the fact that it's just different and unexpected than every run we were supposed to have in the past few years, that it's just a completely different vibe, and people are completely confident. The fans are different at the arena. You know, even in Capital One, even in previous years, you could feel people getting nervous. It was really weird, and it rubbed off on the team, and you could tell it was the way they played. They would tighten up, and it's just different now. I think it was breaking through against Pittsburgh, and look, there's still a lot of work to do. This is far from over. Vegas is a great hockey team.
Oh, yeah.
But
You're right. The feel is different, and not only was there that tension, that apprehension of, oh, here comes the whammy, that was palpable in the arena at home. Trotz talked about it. The announcers on NBC talked about it. It was a known thing. And you're right. This year feels different, almost like in a sense of, okay, well, fuck it then. And that's right. Been the thing, like every step along the way, like starting with the year, right? With the quote from Ovi, this year we're not going to be sucked. That started the year, Jenks, because they lose all these guys that were loaded up for what they thought was their big window. It crashed and burned. No one was picking them this year. And Ovi started the year by going, well, we're not going to be suck. And then he went out and scored how many goals in the first, like, six games? A million?
Oh, it was incredible.
Right. Okay.
And,
so that's,
and you know what it is? Yeah. I'll tell you this. There's a common thread here, and it's two things. It's youth, and it's youth on that roster. And it's youth amongst the fans because, you know, when you and I talk about the Cavs, we're talking about, you know, we have this history, right? We have this history. We think about disappointment and the times the Cavs disappointed us, and it goes back. And there were people that were, you know, watching at the Cavs Center in 98. But the young guys on that roster and the young fans who have come on board recently, that doesn't resonate with them. Now, maybe we should say, well, it should. You know, that's Cavs history. But they don't know it, and it doesn't affect them. So when we went down 0-1 in Vegas, to me, it started to creep in. And I know it's just one game, and I thought, oh, God, here we go. I mean, I don't think we're going to win the Cup. And the majority of fans I talked to who were young said, what are you talking about? The Cavs have fought us one game. And I'm telling you, it's that sort of attitude. Yeah. And the same thing with the guys on the roster. These young guys, they don't have a history with Sidney Crosby. It means nothing to them.
Well, look at also the playoffs. Okay, so first round, down 0-2, two home losses to Columbus. Ovi promises we'll be back, and the team has a sense of, okay, fuck it, we're down 0-2, we'll figure it out. Backstrom gets hurt. Oh, God, we don't have him for a while. Okay, fuck it, we'll figure it out. Burakovsky is out. Then the Wilson suspension. You're like, okay, fuck it, we'll figure it out. Yeah. They get past the Penguins, and then they fall behind to Tampa, and it's looking really, really dark, and the team says, okay, fuck it, we'll figure it out, and on and on and on again. And then it culminates with Cousy looking like he broke his arm, basically, in game two. And Dr. Ovechkin, Jenks, says that night, without any x-rays, without any analysis, he'll be fine. And I remember thinking to myself, what are you talking about, Ovi? You don't know if he's going to be fine. Guess what? Dr. Ovechkin was right. And so that whole vibe just keeps kind of repeating itself, which is wonderful. It's fun.
It's so much fun to see because it's different. It's the same, but it's completely different. And these guys just have – they just have a different – feel about them. And I'll tell you something, you know, we've seen this before where this always happens in the Stanley Cup finals or when in the Stanley Cup playoffs, where there's a team, they have a great player, maybe a superstar, they have a couple guys that suddenly step up and a goalie standing on his head, and that's all you need to make a run to the Cup, right? And it's always been someone else that we've been playing, and finally for the first time it's the Caps. For the first time, the Caps are that team, because everything that normally happens to that one team that gets hot and makes a run is it's actually the Capitals.
Yeah.
And so that's what's exciting to me, is because we've seen it so long. You know, how many times, you know, the Caps run into a guy, just turn into a brick wall all of a sudden. It was like, where was this in the regular season? You know, unbelievable. But now we're the team where everything is coming together. We're Devontae Smith-Pelly scoring a game clincher. I mean, stuff you would have never imagined, which would have sounded preposterous a couple months ago, is now happening in D.C., and that's what makes it so much fun.
It's almost like when Walter White said, when somebody knocks, I am the danger. Like, the Caps have become the team that is the danger, that is making this run right now. You guys at NBC Sports Washington have been killing it with the coverage downtown, inside the arena, outside the arena, for watch parties when the team is not in town, and of course last night for game number 3. Tell me your impressions of how the city has turned out for, you know, that epicenter being downtown Chinatown.
Oh, it's just awesome. There's just so much. You know, I've said this before, and I don't want to get too utopian and about it, but there's so much divisiveness now in 2018, and so when you have something, I mean, sports is a great equalizer, and that's, listen, if you're in the same city with someone, doesn't matter what your beliefs are otherwise in any other area, but everybody can be on the same page with their local sports team making a run, you know, and so when you can walk in downtown D.C., where people are from every walk of life, all over the world, and everyone's in this together, like in this for the Caps, there are tons of fans who definitely jumped on board like a year ago or 3 months ago. But it doesn't matter, because everyone wants to be a part of it. And you just walk around, and it's just this huge community of people who have been dying for anything for this city for so long. I even had a couple guys stop me and they said, listen, man, we're not hockey fans. We're Redskins fans. But this town has not had a celebration like this since 1991.
The world was different. And I was thinking about this, Jenks, that this is only the second – Saturday was only the second championship round game played in Washington, D.C. Yes, there was two of them played in 98, but they got swept by the Red Wings. So I'm going to meld them into one. It's only the second championship round game played in this town in 35 years, going back to, I'm going to call the NFC title game in 91 with the Redskins a championship round game, because it's before the NFC championship. That's a big event, okay? You're talking about three of those in 35 plus years, and there's nothing like it to actually play games that are for the championship in your city, whether it's hockey, basketball, baseball, or in the case of football, an NFC or AFC title game. And that's what we have been starved of, and that's why it's such an amazing relief.
It's such a relief, and the city deserves it. This is I get tired of hearing that DC isn't a great sports town, and fine, it's not Chicago, okay?
Everyone's killing Wilbon. It's hashtag Wilbon sucks. Wilbon's taking a beat.
It's ridiculous. Like I understand that. Sure, there are degrees to everything too. It's not either you're a great sports town or you're terrible. DC is a fine sports town. The problem is we've been starved for so long. But this is a great city, and there are a lot of diehard fans who still to this day have been waiting for decades for any sort of championship. And man, everybody's coming out to say, even if they're not huge sports fans, you know what? That Washington, D.C. does deserve a title. We have been waiting for a long time. We have earned this. We've been patient, and everyone's in this together. And that's exactly what you get when you're walking around. There's so many people that didn't even have tickets to the game, which I understand is really expensive, but they just wanted to be down there on the street, walking around, able to hug someone or to celebrate or to cheer. I've been here since 2004. I've never experienced anything like it. And like we were just talking about, this goes back a long time. So I can't even imagine some of the frustration for some of the fans. But, man, it's good to have this release for now. And I know it's not over, but it's been a great run.
Is there anything that compares coming from Austin, Texas?
Oh, yeah. I've never experienced – the only championship I've ever experienced as a fan was Texas winning the national title in 2005 and Vince with that incredible –
Where were you at that time, Jenks?
You know what? Here's the brutal part of this. My family had scheduled a cruise a year in advance. And my mom said, I'm paying for the entire family, and we're all going on a cruise in the Gulf of Mexico. So there's no getting out of that city. None.
All right, hold on a second. In 05, how old were you?
Oh, God, how old was I? I was 30, 31.
So you were out of college, obviously. You were working professionally where?
Here. I just gotten here.
Oh, you just got to D.C.?
Yep.
And your mom schedules a cruise how many months out?
Six months? Almost, easy. Almost a year out. This was a big idea that she had, and she wanted to make it happen.
Was there any sense a year out that this was a big year coming up for the Horns with Vince Young? Because I don't recall leading up to that how much people were expecting, hey, Vince Young's going to tear it up.
No, the revisionist history about that is funny, because Vince, while he's just an incredible athlete, he was a five-star recruit, but there was talk after his sophomore season, maybe we want him to tight end. Like, maybe he's not a quarterback. And so but we knew we were going to be good. But then you get about three or four games in and you're thinking, whoa, what, this guy is really good. And then you could tell, like, this is something special here. I mean, and you knew, and that's when it started to hit me, like, if these guys make a run. The one thing I remember about that year is that we covered the point spread every single game. I just couldn't believe it. I wish I was gambling more back then. It was unbelievable. But yeah, I thought, God, these guys are going to make a run, and sure enough, they did. The funny thing is, though, this is funny.
Yeah, so okay, back, well, I want to rope it back to your mom and the cruise just before we close the books on this. So your mom does a wonderful, sweet thing that nobody could have foreseen. The cruise is paid for. All the family is there. She happened to pick the one vacation spot where it might be the hardest place to get a live transmission of an American sports feed.
Yes.
So did the ship managed to get a signal in 2005 of the greatest college game ever played in the modern television era? Yes or no?
Yes, they did. And that's exactly what I was going to tell you, because I was, of course, you have to remember 2005, as you know, is a totally different time.
Oh, yeah.
So I'm sitting there and I remember looking around the ship and I'm sweating like, I've got to watch this game. So there was a guy, and this is this stereotypical Texan, he had on these jeans, and he had a mustache, and he has a shirt, which is the Texas flag. His whole shirt's a Texas flag. Black hat, and I said, I'll tell you who's going to know if they're going to have this game on.
This guy.
So I walk over to him, and I said, hey, do you know, have you heard if they're going to play the Texas-USC game, the Rose Bowl? And he looks at me, and he smiles, and he says, direct quote, there's going to be a mutiny if they don't. And I thought, this game's getting on. And sure enough, they had a ballroom where they had it on the big screen. So I watched it in, you know, some cruise ballroom. But I knew once that guy said that, I thought, I bet there's a pretty good chance they thought it would.
That's great. And, then, you know, it's tough because many years ago in 96, when I went on my honeymoon to the Caribbean, I was pleased that I finally found ESPN.
And
I'm waiting for SportsCenter. This was late August, so it still wasn't the meat of the, you know, of any season. It was still the last vestiges of the dead of summer, but I wanted to hear some training camp news and some other stuff. And I hear the SportsCenter theme. I'm all excited, Jenks. And then I learned about something called ESPN International, in which their SportsCenter is comprised of, and I exaggerate not one bit, soccer, cycling, cricket, more soccer, rugby, maybe some other sport I've never heard of, and then just one more dollop of soccer at the end. I was like, holy shit, there's a whole nother ESPN that caters to the rest of the world for the sports that we don't give a shit about.
Exactly. You forget, it's easy to forget, you know, being here for so long that in different parts of the world that the stuff that we love doesn't even resonate. You know, a few months ago, I was at a Wizards game, and the boss said, listen, find a fan tonight. We want you to find a fan who's really passionate about the Washington Wizards and then talk to them. And I said, okay, I'll do that. I found a couple that had gotten engaged during the game, but they were from like Belgium or something, right? And so I talked to them and I'm like, oh, this is going to be great. You know, they're going to tell me about how much they like the Wizards. Turns out they don't care about the Wizards at all. The wife just happens to be a LeBron fan, but their favorite sport is volleyball.
What?
You know, it's just, yeah, I mean, it was just, I thought, this is, you know, I've never met anyone who said,
very weird.
Yeah, but there are, you know, like you said, there's different parts of the world, and, you know, American football or NHL hockey, it's not even on the radar. It's crazy.
Do you love doing the kind of man on the street stuff that you do for NBC Sports Washington?
What's that? I'm sorry, I missed you there.
Do you love doing the stuff that you do, the man on the street stuff? Because you also, obviously, you anchor shows, and I mean, you're a full service sportscaster. But I think easily anyone who watches you knows that one of the best things you do, one of your strengths, is interacting with the fans.
You know, I do, because I have a legitimate and genuine affinity for the fans, and I really care. I mean, I'm a sensitive person, Zabe. I love people, and when I can connect with people, and because I am just a guy, like I'm just a guy who ended up working here. I don't know how much longer that's going to last in this day and age, but I am a guy who just loves teams, and I don't ever want people to look at me as any different. The one thing I will say that I do miss, though, is that I do miss the traditional sort of journalistic elements.
Okay.
Of, you know, I mean, I did, you know, I went to school, I studied journalism, I got 2 degrees in journalism. The underpinnings of what we do are some of the things that I really fell in love with. And so when I don't get to write as much as I used to, or I don't get to create as much as I love talking to the fans, I sometimes really yearn to sort of like, yeah, dig in and do something that was part of my training and part of why I fell in love with the industry. And that doesn't really exist anymore like it used to. So that makes it tough.
You've got 2 degrees in journalism?
I do.
What are they?
I have a bachelor's in journalism and then I have a master's in journalism, but that was more of like statistical analyses and doing a lot of the underpinnings and the, you know, the statistical relevance of the way news is presented and whether or not it has an impact on credibility. I mean, it's some really nerdy stuff.
You know, that's awesome, though. But the problem is, as you know, there ain't no money in journalism. Like, journalism doesn't pay. Nobody wants journalism. And what complicates things, you know, you could do some great broadcast journalism if NBC Sports Washington really wanted to be in that business. But your company is also in the business of carrying and presenting games of the local teams. So inevitably, if a story comes up that doesn't make the local team look great, like let's take, for example, your brethren up in Philly, where the Colangelo story just hit like a bombshell. Like, how much can you dig into that? I'm thinking the answer is they'd probably say this is not what we do, per se. You know?
It's very little. And you know, the reality is, look, we have team partners, right? So it's the same thing with, you know, NBC Sports Philadelphia. When you are in a partnership with certain local teams, and that's just the reality of the situation, you are bound by certain restrictions and wants and needs from both sides. And there wouldn't be some sort of in-depth. That's why it takes the Ringer or some sort of
independent entity,
right, that is not associated with anyone that has to do the digging there, because now the way things work, you wouldn't be given the green light to do something like that.
And as a journalist, did you dig into and read that whole Ringer story, and did you find it fascinating?
I thought it was unbelievable. I mean, it was brilliant, great as a journalist.
Brilliantly played. I mean, they set this perfect mousetrap for Colangelo, and he walked right into it. By the way, he's put all these accounts private at the same time when they only told him about two of the five, and they're like, oh, I see.
Yeah, that was really, and my favorite part was that someone had reached out to them and said, you know, I've run some artificial intelligence on these five different accounts, and what we've come to a conclusion is that they are it's highly, highly probable that it's the same person behind these accounts. And that's something that is just amazing to me, not to mention the journalism involved, but the fact that someone actually ran an AI program to bear out the numbers of how highly probable it was that this was the same person. Yeah. Unbelievable.
Well, as you know, from NBA fans and NBA Twitter, don't even get into their world, because they're so more savvy than anyone else that a GM like Colangelo thinking, oh, I'll get these burner accounts, nobody will know. No, they live NBA Twitter to suss this stuff out. They argue the most mundane shit about NBA players all day, every day. And so it's like he walked into the worst possible scenario with that. So,
and it's the pettiest. No one does petty like the NBA. I mean, even the players are. I mean, not only is it its own world where people live for that kind of stuff, but no one is pettier than like the NBA world and NBA fans. You know, when guys are posting videos that are sort of subtle shots at other players, it's just whole subculture that's pretty fascinating. Yeah.
All right, real quick. I don't want to talk about what's going to happen next. I can't talk about what's going to happen next. Let's just take it one game at a time. How about that?
Yeah,
One
game at a time, and it's okay to believe, man. It's okay to be confident. This is a different team, and it feels like a different year. It's not over, but I'm okay with saying let's go back to game four and just pick up another W.
Why'd Dan call you Ron Burgundy? I always see Conan O'Brien in you. I'm sure you get that a lot, right?
I've gotten that a lot. You know what it was? It was the whole it was the drinking on air, a few years ago when I pretended to have a drink.
Right.
I talked with Dan after that, and that's where that came
okay.
from.
Okay. And you are a bourbon aficionado.
Absolutely. No question.
Give me your top three bourbons. Go.
Okay. Number one, I'm going to say Widow Jane. I love Widow Jane.
Widow Jane. Okay. Never heard
Widow
of it.
Widow Jane.
Okay.
Whistlepig. Anything Whistlepig.
I've heard of Whistlepig. I hear that's fantastic.
Is absolutely fantastic. And I'm going to throw in one that's not necessarily a high end, but it's always good, as Four Roses. Anything Four Roses is, I feel, if you want like just a good price point and just always have a good bourbon, anything Four Roses is a good shot.
Have you been to Rebellion in downtown DC?
I have not. I've got to go.
Yeah, you know what it is, right? It's like a whiskey or a whiskey/bourbon bar in which they've got a wall full of the stuff that you've never seen or heard from. It's pretty cool.
All right, well, that is going to be my next destination then. That sounds awesome.
As a fellow part-time singer, because every now and then I write sub-lyrics for certain songs and then hurt my listeners' ears with my own singing, never stop churning out hits, Jenkins. You've got one hit on your hand. The pressure is on for another one once this thing is over. Thanks for the time, buddy.
Hey, thanks, man. Just broke a top 1,000 on Tidal. It's going to be huge.
All right, buddy. Thanks, Jenks.
Thanks, Abe.
All right, buddy. See ya. Let's end with this today. Technology is a double-edged sword. There are winners, and there are often losers, such as the navigation app Waze, W-A-Z-E. Surely you know about Waze, right? Waze is great because it really combines a lot of, it's more than just navigation, obviously. It's real-time, you know, users inputting, here's a cop, here's a disabled car, here's this, here's that, blah, blah, blah. I don't like how cartoony it looks, but that's just my own taste. It really is a hell of an app. People swear by it. And it's also, of course, leveraging Waze's, the algorithms of mapping and computers and user data and everything else. And so it's very good at finding out and really sort of figuring out what is the fastest way to get somewhere. And that is the problem, depending on where you live. Motorists in California and other places are using navigation apps like this to minimize their travel time from place to place. And given how bad traffic is in Southern California, it now means that many drivers are now going through quiet, formerly quiet, sleepy, suburban streets. There's one Pam Sobo who wrote in to the LA Times of Encino, California. Encino, man! Saying that her quaint little out-of-the-way neighborhood had turned into a living traffic hell thanks to Waze. She wrote, "Please help me and others who live on Bolina Canyon Road. Waze has killed our street, ruined our neighborhood." This, she says, after she saw a column of diverted drivers spinning out on the crazy Baxter Street incline in Echo Park. There's a stop sign in front of Sobo's house. In the morning, cars pull up to it and to a halt, or maybe not even a halt, then hit the gas to blast up the hill. "Everyone's in a hurry in Los Angeles," writes the LA Times. "We'll do anything to shave 10 seconds off a commute. Unwilling to change our evil ways." So here's the question. Does this Pam Sobo have a point? Is she right? Whose side are you on? Should apps like this be able to send what is otherwise major commuting traffic that is otherwise destined for the freeways onto side roads? Or should it be, hey, Pam Sobo, too bad. You don't pay for that street. Your taxpayer money pays for it, but all of our taxpayer money does. If it's not a private road, it's not a private road. So too bad if there is now a higher volume of traffic. Maybe next time you buy a house, you should go look for a cul-de-sac that dead ends. That way you know you're not going to have any traffic going by your house. My personal feeling is I don't know exactly. I'm split on this. Part of me says, no, that's not fucking commuting roads. Get off. Like, that should not be legal. But then how do you stop it? Speed bumps, maybe speed tables, speed limits, more cops, selective road closure. I don't know. But for those in the way of the Waze algorithm, good luck. Because we are all slaves to the algorithm. That'll be a wrap for today. You know the drill. Tell two friends and hit up that Reddit board about how great this is. Leave a positive review rating. Thank you for those. Download, subscribe at all the normal places. And always remember, the hardest game to win is the fourth game of a series. And we ain't even there yet, Caps fans, so let's cool our jets for now. Thank you for listening, and we will see you next time.